Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's Friday, March the 20th, 2020. Had an interesting couple of weeks, and certainly lots to talk about on our latest podcast. And I'm joined by my old friend, Andrew Gardner, for his third appearance.
Third appearance, but my first wearing a mask, I have to say. First time I wore a mask.
And we're going to talk about what the F is going on. Andrew, what do you think? You're a sort of man used to turmoil.
Have you been watching my ex-wife on her latest TV programme?
I have, actually, yeah.
Race Across the World.
Yeah, she comes across very well, Andrew.
Yes.
Very level-headed.
Yeah. Reasonable.
That's right.
Amazing how they edit these things.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for risking life and limb for coming in.
Anything for you, Chris.
We are sat an acceptable social distance apart, aren't we? Well, we are now.
I have been closer to you, Chris. I mean, but we won't. I don't think that's the general public to know, but I think this is sufficient for now.
So, Christ, coronavirus. What do we think?
Well, purely from a property point of view, what really interests me is the dynamic between a 0.1% interest rate, which might encourage people to build, to buy, to borrow, and get things moving, versus...
Which is the intention of dropping interest rates.
Exactly. Versus the hysterical media sensationalism of the world's going to end. You know, all bars will shut, no one will ever go shopping again, people will be home working, and therefore nobody will ever want an office building ever again, unless it's a desk at your kitchen table. So... what interests me is that dynamic between, here lads, here's some wedge, build something, against the, oh, I wouldn't do that if I were you, sort of thing. And I think the outcome of that will be quite interesting. What you could say about CB19 is this sort of economic Darwinism, in that only the strong will survive, or those who adapt, like the finches in the Galapagos Islands with the large beaks, will the ones who adapt the quickest survive the longest. And I think that'll be the interesting outturn from this, and see whether, you know, people who were brave get rewarded, or the people who sort of hid get rewarded for sheltering, if you like, from an economic point of view.
And what do you think?
What do I think? Personally,
will fortune favour the brave?
Favours the brave, yeah.
Is that what you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure so, because it's the easiest thing in the world to say no, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like Dave Gorman, look where it got him, saying yes all the time. You know, sometimes you just got to say, do you know what? I'm going to have a crack at this. Move on.
Dave Gorman, where did they get him?
Oh, it turned into a film with Jim Carrey, where the bloke just says yes to everything.
Yeah, yes.
Someone says, you go, the yes man, yes, that'll be him. Yes, obviously. Yes.
He got the girl in the end, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, so we say we all should be yes men.
No, I'm just saying, you should embrace the opportunity to do something, and perhaps do things, don't be frightened of doing things differently. And, you know, it's exactly as you said, fortune favours the brave. And I think there's a definite drive out there. You know, everything is, this is affecting every single person. How they react to it is actually more interesting than the actual thing itself.
Okay, that's a very good way of putting it. Yeah, you mentioned home working, then. What a nightmare that is, and I haven't even done it yet.
I was engaged in some home schooling this morning,
right?
And I think so far one pupil's been expelled and the teacher's turned to drink. It's really difficult because kids aren't used to being at home with the parents. They think it's fun. Kids, parents, home equals fun. You know, school is not
for them.
For them, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think from an adult point of view, you know, you go home and all of a sudden you get a list of DIY jobs emerge that you didn't realise you needed to do, for example, and then panic buying paint at B&Q.
Light bulbs,
you know, you should have done that. Why haven't you moved that? Why don't you do that? And you get the chances of distractions are immense. It takes quite a solid mental effort to actually crack on. So I think I personally have been self-isolating in a 15,000 square foot office floor, which is devoid of people, but got furniture in. So I have my pick of offices, and I can keep in many, many meters away from everybody.
Yeah.
But I think getting into a proper work routine, put your work clothes on, go somewhere quiet, like even sit in your car to make phone calls.
Have a shave.
I was catching on my mask. All the usual things, because you have to have a work mentality, and if you don't have that mentality, you do get distracted very easily. I mean, if you probably notice, I've cut my finger this morning. You might ask, how did you do that, Andrew? I was using a modelling knife as I was crafting a Lockheed Hudson Airfix model, right. And the knife slipped and gashed my finger. So obviously I was working hard,
yeah.
Or not. But it's too easy to get distracted. I think home working takes a certain mindset, and you've got to be quite regimented about doing it to be effective. But then there are certain benefits. I think the increased focus actually helps you do more things if you can get that focus
in a shorter period of time.
Yeah.
Joking aside, that's what I've noticed over the years, that if you take the odd afternoon and morning at home, you do rattle through your workload and you're a lot quicker. But then you miss out on
banter.
Well, yeah, but
cups of tea.
Yeah. I mean, luckily here we've got a guy here who makes a cup of tea probably every 15 minutes to.
It's not you, is it?
No, it's not me. No, but you miss out on the ideas, don't you? And sort of bouncing off each other. That's very difficult to replicate on a Skype call or a Microsoft Teams call or a conference call, isn't it? Everybody's, it's too artificial, isn't it, I think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Either that or it takes a long time.
So what's your thoughts on how do you keep the creative juices running then during this sort of period?
Crosswords, jigsaws, Airfix models.
Right.
Seriously.
It's not for everyone that, though, is it?
No, obviously not. Only nerds. From a property point of view, for example, I was looking at auction results, going through Edward Mellor Auction, looking at Pew & Co, bits and pieces like that. I'm very boringly looking at the stats I've got for South Manchester and looking through some of them and just tidying them up and updating them. There's things you can do, and, you know, throws up buildings and things that you haven't previously given time or attention to. So, yeah, not a bad use of time.
Technical question. How do you value something at the moment?
Exactly the same as you did previously.
Times 50%. But times 50%.
No, because it comes back to what I was saying before. If something's worth £1 million, if it was worth £1 million a month ago, you might argue it's still worth £1 million. It's just that there might be less people out there to buy it because they're all risk averse, but that might be offset by people with more money because interest rates have gone down.
Yeah.
So your five potential buyers or whatever might still be five potential buyers. It just might be different people, and the value still might be £1 million. I don't think the world should go into knee-jerk reaction that everything's suddenly worthless, because it's all relative. All it is it's raining and everyone's getting wet. Nothing's fundamentally changed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Do you not agree with that? You want to buy lots of cheap things?
No.
I think there'll be some panic buyers.
Yeah.
Panic sellers.
Yeah, we'll see, won't we? Where do you think this leaves agile working?
My view is that
enforced agile working is going to piss off so many people, create so many ructions in their home life and their personal life and all the rest of it, that they're just not going to want to do it again.
Yeah,
do you agree?
I totally agree. I think it'd be very divisive. And like you say, being forced into doing it, there'll be people who will swear blind, they will never do it again.
Yeah.
And there's other people for whom it's a whole new lifestyle.
Create suspicions, doesn't it, between colleagues, whether, you know, they're doing their bit and all the rest of it, or whether they're just around making Airfix models all day.
Precisely. Yeah. Luckily, I'm a director of a company.
One employee.
I'm the only employee, so I'm going to grasp myself up to the HR director.
No, but seriously, I mean that's going to be that's going to be a. Do you remember at DTZ when?
Bring your dog into work day?
No. 10 years plus ago, when someone put a cut the broadband, the telephone line in half down Mosley Street,
right.
And we didn't have any internet or telephone connections for 4 or 5 days, so we worked from home. And there was all sorts of allegations of people sort of not pulling away and all the rest of it, and it was, I just remember it being a quite toxic week.
Yeah,
I
agree.
From
with you.
Before I can remember, I was playing golf most of the time.
I do an Airfix Waltz, but,
exactly. But yeah,
we're both avoiding the bish. But
yeah.
I agree. I think what people might fall into the trap of is if businesses fail to meet targets. There was something in the on Place North West just now saying you and I will fail to meet targets because of CV19.
Chris and Andrew, or you and I, the company?
No, you and I, the company.
Right.
And you've got to ask yourself, is that really because of CV19, or are they just thinking brilliant excuse? Or
a good time to hide bad news?
Or will someone somewhere blame, you know, an underlying structural failing on homeworking or the fact that the virus or this, that and the other? And I think you'll see quite a few interesting situations come out where people seek to blame what might be a weak business case. I'm not suggesting you and I have a weak business case, incidentally. I'm just saying that as an example.
Case listed listening.
Allegedly. Yeah. But no, just saying that people might piggyback this to cover up a multitude of sins. And that includes, you know, working at home yourself and maybe not achieving as much as you might do.
Yeah. What do you think is... where do you think the next deal is coming from? Where do you think your next deal is coming from? Do you think it's a letting? It's going to be a letting, a sale, an acquisition, an assignment, a lease regear? There must be 100,000 conversations going on at the moment about restructuring your lease in return of a bit of a rent.
There's two things.
Holiday.
I actually think that. I think what will happen is the owner-occupier market might rev up a bit more, and you might find more people buying their own property because of the reduced interest rates and the fact that they have belief in their own business. And what you're not doing is asking an investor to invest in a business. You have confidence in your own business,
yes.
So you'll do it. I think that's potentially where a market could emerge. The lease.
So that's a positive for, say, the Warrington office market, the South Manchester office market,
yeah,
where that has traditionally gone on. The city centre market, a bit different, isn't
yeah,
it?
And I think you're right. I think lease regears will come in there. I think businesses, because of the uncertainty, will either want to add in breaks, or equally they might take longer leases to get some rent-free now to help them through this period. Landlords are probably worrying about the valuations, as you mentioned before. I think you're right, lease regears and looking, having a long, hard look at your lease will combine with another facet of this, which is how much space does a business actually need? So if at the moment 100% of your workers are working from home, your space requirement is nil. When the tide comes back in, you might still find that 10-15% of your workforce are quite happy working from home, and therefore your space requirement might reduce by a similar level. So you might find regears for that reason.
But will touching on what we're talking about before about agile working, this really is the test about whether it works or not.
Yeah.
So I'm taking a slightly different view in that business managers and owners might want will notice an effect on production.
Yeah, and want the
productivity
control back, yeah.
And we'll want them back in the office. That's what I suspect is going to happen, and it might actually have a positive effect on the office market in terms of size. So anyway, size requirements. Anyway,
that's true. And I think that going back to what I was saying before about economic Darwinism, I think people who can adapt their business to suit the workers and the productivity are the ones that are going to enforcing a blanket you will work from home or a blanket you must work in the office probably isn't going to work. And I think what you're going to find is that workforces become more dynamic in how they operate. People work in different ways. And I think business owners and leaders either have to have that confidence or, like you say, they become more autocratic and say, you must come in the office where I can see you and stop wagging off. You know, and I think, again, you'll see a fracturing of the market into sort of different drivers for different companies.
Yeah. WeWork, Regus, serviced offices. Is this their time? Is this their time? Or is this going to... Is their business model going to buckle?
An interesting one. I spoke to someone from IWG earlier in the week. They said that inquiry levels were up because of people wanting to distance themselves or small working groups working outside of the main office. And I think what you might see with serviced offices is they might realise that their range geographically is probably constraining them. They should have a wider geographic range because, for example, where would you get a serviced office in the middle of Stockport of any great quality? And you might say there isn't much, but then the demand could be there because it's a good commute for large numbers of people without having to come into town and bustle with the crowds. And you're looking at smaller centres in more dispersed locations because that's literally where people live. And I think you might see an increase there where people book an office for a week or 2 weeks because they can't work at home, but they don't want to come into town. And I think that there might be an increase from that point of view. What the wider picture is, it goes back to this, how dynamic and flexible do people want to be working? Will a company commit to a 5, 10, 3-year lease, not knowing what the future's like, and say, do you know what, we'll just take serviced offices for 12 months? And I think you're right, there'll be a mini boom in serviced offices. Where that seed goes out into the long term is anyone's bet at this moment in time.
So the wide assumption is that we are going to go into a recession. This will be my third recession. I think it'll be my third recession whilst working in property. How about you?
Well, given that I'm considerably older than you, Chris, and by inference, extremely more experienced.
Wiser?
No. Probably fourth.
You're fourth?
Yeah, I got Iran Kuwait War 91 recession. I got kicked out.
Was it a recession then?
I got kicked out of grooming quantity surveying job that I had in Wimbledon. 91 recession.
Yeah.
.com. 2001.
Yeah.
There was something then. Yeah. 2006 to about 3 weeks ago.
2008, wasn't it?
2008 to December 2019. That recession. and then this new one. four, maybe five. I don't know. I don't even know what a not recession looks like anymore.
So what can some of our younger listeners expect in the next couple of years? And if we are going into recession, is it all doom and gloom? Is there opportunity?
Fewer deals, more pressure on billing and this, that, and the other, and trying to get deals to happen. However, people are more likely to consider property options as a way of defraying costs, because in any business your property costs are somewhere between 12-14% of your overall costs, and staff obviously make up the rest.
Or they should be,
yeah. And there'll be a job of work there for people to reduce that cost to 10%, 8% or whatever, or just reduce the outgoings of a business. And I think that provides an opportunity. There's another opportunity of people working more efficiently, as we talked about before, but also using more efficient space. And that you could argue that moving into a newer, better laid out building is better for the workforce as a whole and more efficient than staying in your old building with, you know, wood chip wallpaper and, you know, poor kitchen facilities. So you might get efficiencies from that way. So there's always an opportunity out there. You know, knock on someone's door and say, I can save you money through property. It's always quite compelling. And the thing with property is it's not a one-off sale. It's a remember.
And then what?
Well, it was very exciting, really. But I think, yeah, recessions are something generally to be avoided if you possibly can. But no, opportunity. I think what comes out in a recession is people are far more imaginative, and you know, it's a time of evolution. Look at the dinosaurs.
How do you mean?
Well, they evolved into birds, didn't
they? They'll die,
and chickens. No, not all of them. They evolved into birds and chickens.
No, they died.
No, they honestly, God, they evolved. No, they evolved into birds, as we see them today. Birds are the ancestors.
Yeah, they look just exactly the same as a T-Rex, don't they?
Because they've evolved. Yeah, it's called evolution, Chris. You know,
evolve or die.
Or grow feathers and fly off. You know, I mean, it's exactly what they did. You know, so yeah, it's a time of economic and business evolution.
So just coming back to sort of present day, the sort of social media and the online media, it just seems to be focused on two things. It just seems to be focused on coronavirus
and Tom Hanks.
No, well, yeah, and sport, isn't it? So what do you think should happen? What do you think? So there's a debate going on about whether professional football, professional rugby, whether they should conclude their football fixtures and everything behind closed doors to get a conclusion. Do you think that that's what should happen, or do you think we should just null and void the season, or stop the season now and say, well, your first place is won, last three, well, you're in the thing, you should be relegated. What do you think? What's your view?
Well, there's three solutions to this. There's either you have a 4, 5, 6 week holiday and then start sport back up again. You play behind closed doors.
It doesn't sound like you could do that, because the Prime Minister was talking last night, Thursday the 19th of March, about that we're going to be in this, we're not going to see the sort of this turning into our favour for another 12 weeks, which takes us into June.
Okay, 12 weeks then. Okay, why not work out the capacity of every footy ground if everyone stood 3 metres apart and only let that number of people in and they have to stand 3 metres apart?
I think what they're worried about is an interesting idea, but I think what they're worried about is people gathering outside.
Going to pubs to watch footy and stuff like that.
And also actually going to the grounds and standing outside.
Yeah. Well, they could try, a bit like enforced homeworking, they could try a couple of matches. My take would be, if I was the FA or whatever, or the Premiership, I would try a couple of matches, live streamed only, behind closed doors, and then I'd ask the players what they thought of it, and I'd ask the public what they thought of it. And if it was any good, crack on. If there was an overwhelming nah about the whole thing, then, like you say, you might conclude that you would stop the season. Or put another way, you get to the point where you get the top four teams in rugby and in football, say, and you have like a little mini competition between them, and work out whoever wins.
That's not going to sort out the relegation element in football, though, is it?
We could do the bottom four as well. The bottom, whatever. But you could run a limited number of matches for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
You could perhaps do that.
But perhaps a deeper conversation. You know, do you think society is really missing sport and is really missing the distraction of sport?
I think what's happening is people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm missing sport. I'm mad.
It's just a distraction from real life, though, Chris. That's all the sport is.
Well, I know, but it's what it is for me.
What's that gag? Well, the lack of sport meant I've had to talk to my missus. I found out she'd been made redundant from Woolworths. That's why you like sport.
Well, yeah, I know.
But all the things that go with it. Now, I think people are missing
you joke, but, you know, it's a fundamental part of British society, isn't it?
Totally. It gives you something to talk about, gives you focus, gives you something to enjoy. Unbelievable. And maybe we'll find other sports. You know, look how much the everyone got behind the curling team at the Winter Olympics, for example. Snooker used to be massive
on the
telly.
Well, that's been called off today, the World Snooker Championships.
Has it?
Yeah.
Oh, good God.
Yeah.
Well, you could do that behind closed doors.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Or actually, curling's brilliant because in those icy conditions, nothing's going to survive. But some sport will emerge, you know, whether it's. You know, whether it's squash or there'll be something that comes up on telly that everyone will get behind, because that's just the nature of people who want to support sport for exactly the reasons you've said. You know, it's social cohesion, something to talk about, you know, a bit of a distraction, and away we go. So yeah, it's a tough one for the sports people, plus they're all losing a load of money. But then, funnily enough, I don't think people are too bothered about footballers losing money.
Well, I know, yeah. One has little sympathy on that front.
Paul Pogba's just giving page for, he wants to raise 27 grand for his 27th birthday to give away to food banks. Now, the fact he earns whatever, 40 grand a week or whatever it is, and the rest, yeah. You know, he got 5,000 quid from people, and that was it. I mean, there's the level of empathy and sympathy and generosity towards footballers is unfortunately quite low. So
yeah, quite. What about, just moving back, talk about properties, it's after all Glenbrook's property podcast.
Yes.
Locations. Which locations are going to emerge first as part of a recovery? Will it be London? Will London just sort of power ahead? Is London at risk of...
Well, it depends on dealing with the masses. If they keep the tube shut and don't let people congregate in groups of more than 10 or 15 or 50, then you might as well move to Truro or Redruth or Aberystwyth.
Yeah.
Because you can move around and there's more going on there. You know, you can actually function. Having said that, there are more services available in big cities. Will people tend to big cities? And again, it depends on the longer term effect on transport. Will public transport bounce back, or will suddenly everybody get in their car? And those little magic Christmas trees you have, you know, disinfect your car with them, and you can, you know, will out of town business parks suddenly become the rage because you can get in your own car and drive there? Mm. It depends on the longer term health dynamics, if you like, I think, on what will emerge. But I've said this before in podcasts 1, 2, and 3. You know, people will tend to nodes, transport nodes and amenity nodes and hubs. So whereas decent transport, decent amenities for staff is quite accessible, that's where you're going to see growth. Simple as.
Yeah, interesting. And then finally, just to wrap up, we're all off to the pub tonight, aren't we? The virtual pub.
Yep, I've been invited to the pub. A whole gang of us are going to FaceTime one another at 7 o'clock with beer in hand from our self-isolating... places. I've yet to think of a good name for the pub. The self-isolationist, a bit like the botanist, but it's a bit lame, that. I don't
very
know.
Very lame. You can do better than that.
How about the Mask and Cask? Is that better?
Yeah.
So we're going to the Mask and Cask at 7 o'clock. Yeah, and we're all going to FaceTime with beers. I'll let you know how that goes. You know.
What, I'm not invited?
Well, I might ask my friends if you can join in, yeah, if you want.
Okay. Andrew, thank you. Thank you, and thank you for listening to the latest Glenbrook podcast. We intend to do a few of these. We've been trying to do them weekly, but I think we're going to try and...
Soldier on.
Well, I think we're going to try and sort of up the ante and do sort of a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 a week, just do our little bit for sort of, you know, keeping... a bit of social interactive going. Anyway, thank you very much and speak soon.
Thank you.